To begin.
Are you watching closely?
To begin.
Clytus, I'm bored.
How to start?
What plaything can you offer me today?
Hello all, and welcome to the first syllable episode 20-something, I don't remember. There are still several episodes when I need filler that I could bring back. I have a couple things about old stories of mine that I never edited. I had when I was still doing Existential Trilogy as a trilogy. Now it's just Groundhog Day Project came back and the other two kind of got lost. Sorry. If you were into Ex Machina or Eternal Sunshine, they're two of my favorite movies, but the trilogy just wasn't working for me because it was hard to schedule, hard to find people to do it, and I didn't just want to do it myself. Groundhog Day, I'm tempted to just do myself, kind of like I did Annihilation, and right now I love how that is going because after, what, 9 episodes, we're not even to minute 3 because I'm having extra stuff happen, reading blog entries that tie into themes, reading stuff from the script outright, things like that. It's pretty fun. And that has to do with writing. That's why I'm talking about it here. Because I'm reinventing the way I do my podcast so that I don't really write them exactly. I plan them in my head, but don't necessarily write them. But that doesn't mean there's not a lot going on. Currently, obviously, I am still working on Death, Death, Death. Next week is spring break, so I hope to put a big chunk of that out, get done, then maybe finish it. That'd be cool. I don't know about that. I haven't written on it in the last several days, though, because things got frickin' busy, and after spring break, they're going to get even busier, because I think I've mentioned this, I have a morning class that is going to mess with a lot of my time to do other things, and also mean I get a little less sleep, so we'll see how that goes. I have this sort of mental block to being on the computer after about 5, or at the latest, like 6 p.m., because I got other things to do. I got movies to watch, I got TVs to watch, I got dinners to make, I got other things. And right now in the afternoon, I got classes for the days in the week. And so that's messing a little bit with that. So I record when I get the chance. Right now I'm recording, what is it? It is March 18th. It is 4:29 p.m. at the moment. I just got home from a class about 10, 15 minutes ago. And no one else is here. So I'm like, hey, I'll record really quick before I turn on a movie. Because I'm not going to write right now. Because if I'm going to write, I want to know that there's a chance I could do at least an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, maybe more. Next week, I'm hoping I get the maybe more several days. Because Death, Death, Death is... Death, Death, Death is currently... Come on, where's the page count? Where's the page count? I am on page 78. The thing is, I think that's only about halfway. I feel like it's got a sort of four-act structure, though I don't know if it fits with the real four-act structure. What is the name of that book? Storytelling in the New Hollywood. I haven't read that. I've owned that book for a few years now, and I haven't read it. That talks about, and I think this script fits pretty well with a four-act sort of structure. I don't know if it's that four-act structure, but I feel like it has four acts, and I feel like I'm at the end of the second act. There's a couple more scenes, and then an abrupt change in the setting as characters figure out what's going on. You all heard spoilers already, people hearing this in the future. Spoilers for Death, Death, Death. Assuming it exists. The characters arrive. We meet our 19 characters, plus Benny. 20 characters. He's not really a character, he's a force. He's a thing. And they all get to the house, and I have to keep them separated in very specific ways, as you know, from the setting. And that took a little while, because there's a lot of characters, but also I had to introduce them in their vehicles before they get to the house. Then I had to make sure they get to the house in such a way that I could have them being not there at the exact same time arriving. So it had to be one vehicle at a time arrives. And then I had to start setting up what's going to happen to them, and then for them, in-world, deaths start happening quick. They don't know about it. The first death happens and no one knows about it yet. Well, someone saw the body, but then they were the next one to die, so. None of the other characters know. At this point, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I think 7 people have died. Because then once I introduced them all, then what I would call Act 2 was the deaths start to happen as we get a little more conflict, inter-character conflict. We get some emotional admissions. a surprising one that I don't know, where I was like, what if Ringo had a monologue? I'm like, okay. Because I had lost track of him. I think I said this in the show, or maybe I posted it on Blue Sky, that I needed to have a better way of keeping track of where the characters were because there's so many of them. I had forgotten where Ringo was in the house. I'm like, I know he walked in. I don't remember where he went. And so I had to go figure out where he went. And I hadn't really said. I think I had implied from the phrasing that he went upstairs. I'm like, what if he didn't go upstairs? I'm like, where would we find him? He's not in the game room. He's not in the dining room. He's not in the living room. He's not out on the deck. That's what we know. I didn't want him to be in a bedroom because I wanted him to be somewhere where someone else would find him. The people who had been previously in the kitchen now were in the dining room for the seance, and then split up between upstairs and the living room after the seance. So I put Ringo in the kitchen, and he's in there drinking by himself, kind of going through something. And I love that because there's this thing. Okay. I've talked about this. I've probably talked about it in this show. I've definitely posted about it on Blue Sky multiple times. I wrote about it in my blog. It's what I call the shallows problem. It's from a lot of movies, but I call it the shallows problem because it feels shallow. And it was in the movie The Shallows, where girl is going to this beach, is there kind of all by herself, shark attacks, gets stuck on this little island thing, has to get back. Great movie. The problem I have with The Shallows is the beginning and the end. There is absolutely no reason for that plot to be happening to this girl who just happens to be, what, grieving her mother and thinking about dropping out of college. Really, I should call it the, what was that movie called with frickin' Owen Wilson where he's in the Navy? Is that No Way Back? No. What was that called? I don't know. But that movie with Owen Wilson in the Navy.
It is called Behind Enemy Lines. Came out in 2001.
That's another one that has a shallows problem. He's thinking of quitting the Navy, and it's like, okay. Why? How does that motivate the character going forward? It doesn't. He crashes, he gets stuck behind enemy lines.
Me from editing again, because how the hell did I not remember the title when I said it? Behind Enemy Lines, it's right there. It's because it's not a movie I really think about a lot, except negatively, so I guess the title is not important. Shallows is such a better name for it. I'm going to keep calling it the Shallows problem, because it makes it sound shallow. Behind Enemy Lines problem sounds too plotty, I guess? Not character backstory bullshit, which is what the Shallows problem is. But back to me.
Makes his way back. At one point, I guess he finds a mass grave, but there is no indication that he thinks anything about it. There is no dialogue. There is no discussion. There is no commentary. There is not even a shot of him suddenly grieving and realizing the horror of the situation he's in. Just like the Shallows, her thinking of dropping out of college has absolutely nothing to do with her going to this beach and getting stuck there chased by a shark. It's just a useless extra thing so that the character has something going on. And then at the end of the Shallows, she's like, no, I'm going back to college. It's fine. And at the end of the thing, he's like, no, I'm staying in the Navy. I'm like, but why? Nothing changed. Nothing about the previous situation has changed. Getting near-death experience doesn't mean you suddenly solve all of your trauma and your personal whatever. That being said, I love the implication the characters have things going on. I wanted every one of my 19 characters to feel like they were in the middle of something. So that, from the start, there's so many characters. A, because we spend so much time on that first act, there's no clear indication who the final girl is. If you know this is a slasher film going in, you don't know who's going to live. And arguably, I'm setting up a couple characters that shouldn't be the final girl, structurally. But that's the point, is give you options, and maybe there is no final girl. Maybe the final survivor is someone else, you know? You don't know. There's a couple characters where clearly they're going to die pretty quickly because they're sexually active, too much people immediately. And even that, I wrote... Sorry, I'm giving like a coy little side eye at you and the audience. Hi, how you doing? Because I'm going to spoil it. Fuck it. Frenchie's the first to die. Boom. Anyone listening to this podcast and then going to see Death, 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 assuming the movie actually exists at some point in the future? Ha ha. You know who dies first. Frenchie is hilarious. She is awful. She is in the 1985 bit. She is a foreign exchange student. She is sexually open about what she wants. She is the one who was invited as extra people to the house. She says she invited some guys so that the Marys could, she thinks the Marys could use a ride. The Marys are a lesbian couple. She knows this. She is joking. In the script, I don't know if it's clear that she's joking. I'll make sure it is. And I'll make sure, because the point is, she is too much. She is wearing really short shorts in the van, and the opening scene is basically, as we come into the van, she is crawling over the back seat, getting something from her bag, knowing that, yeah, she's in the van with four other girls, but she's also in there with a 12-year-old boy, and he is absolutely staring at her ass. She doesn't care. She is blunt and over the top and too much, and I wrote her in such a way, and I'm so glad this worked out. At least for me. And really, that's what you have to do. Write for yourself. Don't write for the audience. Write for what works for you. She works for me because what she does is immediately I'm like, yeah, she's awful, but she's really entertaining. Because she knows she's kind of awful. She knows these other people have a hard time putting up with her. And like, it makes you wonder, why are they friends with her? And we don't really find out. We can't find out because she's the first one who dies. And other people are not going to talk about her too much later. Ringo mentions her in his monologue. He apologizes to Marty. Marty's the kid, the 12-year-old. But it's like, have these characters like the Marys, Mary and Mary Jane is why they called the Marys. Mary is, this has not come up in the script yet. I love it. It's been hinted at that she has something going on right now. She recently broke up with somebody. We're not sure why. Yet she's in what seems like a committed lesbian relationship with Mary Jane. And that's on purpose. Basically, she kind of cheated on Mary Jane. And this is something we had, it's something that's there in the subtext right now. And I'm going to have to spell it out coming up when we get to the beginning of Act 3. Keep in mind four act structure. So about mid film, but she's got stuff going on. Susie and Marty, brother and sister. Marty's only there with these older kids at this house because Susie is his legal guardian. She just turned 18, and she is his legal guardian because their parents died a year ago. Whether or not they're grieving or not is not the point. What it is how are they living? And they specifically have this thing. They're a little back and forth. They're kind of cute as a brother and sister. I kind of love it. Because it's what I wanted, and it worked, is that they like, someone gives him a beer. Ed gives Marty a beer. And when Susie finds out, she's like, worried? But she's not going to tell him not to drink it because they have a thing. No rules anymore. The only rules they have is he still has to go to school and she has to go to finish school and go to work so that she can support them both. Otherwise, there aren't rules. They can do whatever. What exactly that means? We don't know because we're seeing them on this weekend trip and really we're seeing them on a single afternoon into evening into night. I thought it was going to be the whole weekend for the story, but no, I needed the first death to happen because I couldn't have all these characters moving around each other for too long. There's what's that guy's name? Zbigniew. Oh, what's his last name?
His name is Zbigniew Rybczynski. Zbigniew Rybczynski. He's got a few short films that are pretty good, that are all a little time loopy. Tango's the famous one. I believe it was up for an Oscar. Long time ago. It involves a series of people all entering the same room over and over. At first it's just one, then two, then three, and it doesn't seem like they should fit in this room, and it's all perfectly timed and choreographed. And there's, in my blog, groundhogdayproject.com, I had the diagrams that he had as to where each person was moving to make sure they wouldn't be interacting with each other and they could all fit around each other, but it's filmed at an angle so you can't quite see how much space they have. And so it feels at one point like the room is way too crowded. There's like 30 people end up in the room at the same time, all going through different motions, different repeated actions. And so as they exit the room on one side, they'll come back in where they came in the place before, and all of these things start to overlap and creates kind of this music. It's timed like a tango. And it's fantastic. I believe it's still on YouTube. I think Zbigniew has his own YouTube channel. So you can find it. Maybe I'll put the link in the description if I remember. Back to me. There's a short film called Tango. It was going to feel like Tango, where you have all these people interacting in the same room, but they're not interacting with each other. And it's hard to write that. It's easy to fake it out when it's brief. You know, there's two couches by the fireplace.
We have the Marys on one, and we have Elsie and Charlie on the other. And so when someone comes into the room and interacts with the Marys, it's easy to avoid the fact that they're not interacting with Elsie and Charlie. Visually, we can make that very clear without it being too strange. Things like that are fun. Act 2, people start to die. The seance happens. The little explanation of the legend of the guy who's killed people in this house happens at the same time as the seance, and I wrote this little cross-cut thing between the two of them, which I kind of love how it turned out. Act 3 is where everyone who is still alive, which I think there's going to be 3 more deaths before we get to there, everyone who's still alive locks themselves in the basement to be safe, and Benny can't get in. And then they finally figure out what's happening. The larger what. Because Kitty knows about the other people in the house. Kitty can see them and hear them, and as it turns out, she's also able to talk to them. And so the groups start communicating with each other. That's Act 3. And then Act 4 will be, for whatever reason, they have to get out of the basement. I think probably they'll make a run for it in the morning. Will it be morning? No, I want it to still be dark, I think. Or maybe they'll be down there all day. Maybe one of them tries to get out, gets killed, and so they end up there in there till the next night. And they're getting hungry, and they're getting desperate, and so finally they're going to make a run for the vehicles to get out of there. And Benny comes back, and he just kills and kills and kills. They're trying to fight back, and we get to some of the other deaths. And that's Act 4. And I like that. But it is going to be long. It's going to be about, right now, what did I say, 78 pages? And it's going to be about another that much. So it's going to be around 150, I think. There could probably be a lot of streamlining, plus a lot of the early stuff, because it's back and forth dialogue in the cars, could be played really quick in the editing. When you have a dialogue-heavy script, I don't think the 1 minute per page thing is as accurate, but I'm not sure. There are some pages with less dialogue, like descriptions of what happens when certain people die and things like that. That's the thing I'm working on right now. And then the next thing, I think I'm going to work on the rewrite of the Escalor, which I think I've talked about, is a Basara short story that I wrote 90s. I think the Escalor was in the late 90s. Yeah, like 98, 99. That was the first Basara, or at the time it was just Basara story that I wrote. And I want to rewrite it to integrate some of the new sort of world building. And it's not much of a rewrite. For the most part, the story is pretty good. I want to change the opening. I want to change bits here and there with the dialogue and how the story interacts with certain world building stuff. And then I want to make sure the conversation with the dragon holds up relative to the history. I also have to decide when it's set, because that's not clear. After that, probably choose 2 rabbits, which you've heard about in this show before, which currently has 1,800 words worth of notes on my phone. That's a lot. That is notes about various characters, notes about plot points, notes about Lee and his life. I know his favorite bookstore. I know his favorite restaurant. I know his favorite kind of music. I know about his pet. I know about how he gets around town. I know about his recent sort of ex-girlfriend and the femme fatale that might be involved in the current case and the other larger conspiracy that might tie into the current case and extra stuff. I also have ideas for at least 3 short stories involving Lee, because he's a simple character to use as a perspective. I think I've said this before, with Basara I want to play with narrative structures like Four Finger Discount, which I completed a draft of in January. Is first-person narrator, but the first-person narrator is not really part of the story. Cecil is in 1 chapter of the book, and it is later than the book that he meets again with Odds, the main character, and she tells him about the overall plot, and he put together this story. So this is the story he is telling that is a version of what she told him that he is telling because he has a cameo in it. And I used him because I wanted the ability to be kind of a smartass occasionally to avoid certain parts of the story. I don't want an omniscient narrator for Basara because it'd be too easy to get bogged down in explaining everything too much. I don't want to explain everything. Mostly, like, his book, Cecil's version of Odd's story, is written for someone who's in Basara. So he's not telling you what an animal is when they ride on, oh my god, what are those crabs called? Lugs. When Kill, in his flashback, we find out that he spent years working as a guard for a lug. They're these basically, like, giant hermit crab-looking things that you can store stuff in the dents on their shells because they're so big. Or you can ride on them. They have seats installed. And this one just goes back and forth between these two towns over and over. That's how it lives. And he is its guard. I don't describe the lug. He mentioned the shell, mentioned that it's alive, that it can't really talk, but it can kind of understand. Because people in the world would know what a lug is. Similar to the magics. Some people wouldn't know how magic works, but they know there's magic. People know there's gods. Although, for the most part, people only deal with two gods, which is Lyastra Nemes and Pero. And primarily, any of them, if you would call it worship, they worship Pero. The rest of the gods are the forgotten gods. That doesn't mean they shouldn't be mentioned. When I wrote The Escalor, which probably its title will change now as well, because I'm also trying to use like puns and idioms as the titles, because I did that before. Hindsight ends up being a pun. Eating Crow is an idiom, ends up being a pun. Some old stories that also need a little rewrite for world building sake. When I originally wrote The Escalor, I didn't know there were these gods in the world. I hadn't created it that way. But in retrospect, I'll say it as I didn't know. So the fact that the people of Crail are Paroers is important, and it makes them seem kind of antiquated and quaint and conservative, backward. Except they're not. Paro is, as far as they know, a progressive religion. It's like if Christianity rose up, Paro was 1,000 years ago? Yeah. Paro was 1,000 years ago. As if, like, this guy was like, I'm going to be a god. And he challenged all the rest of the gods and took over. And this happened 1,000 years ago. And this is fresh. And people idolize this guy because he proved that, you know, you don't have to be beholden to the other gods. Except now, it's turning to that point where there's such an organized religion around Paro that it's kind of becoming its own problem. But in Crail, that's all they do. Might mention the other gods, but they're not important to that story. Paro is. And Beleazaz the Beautiful, one of the few dragons in the world that's still alive, is important to that story. I gotta make sure the history with that works. Because I think later world building, even before recent stuff, put the War of Fire longer ago than I was thinking when I wrote this story. And so Beleazaz is much older and probably should come across as almost like delusional hermit. Kind of like Smaug, but not really. What's funny is, I was going to say I wasn't familiar with Smaug, but no, I read The Hobbit in high school, didn't I? Yeah. Okay, so I knew I was familiar with Smaug. Not like the movie version, but like this dragon no one ever sees. Although I guess in Lake Town they do see the dragon sometimes. But Beleazaz, no one even knows Beleazaz is still there. No one goes to the cave of Beleazaz because she might be in there. Wait, is Beleazaz a she? I don't remember. Lysinger's a she. Ryokai is definitely a he. Beleazaz, I don't remember. There's not that many dragons in the world, and so many of them are ones I already have names for, and they're from old stories. A couple came out of D&D campaign that I have retroactively set in Basara, so that if the next homebrew campaign will also be set there. But at this point, there might be so much world building that I have to write that as a novel instead of let players ruin it. Honestly, you know, we'll see how that goes. But that's the state of things. I haven't been writing the last few days because I got kind of busy, but I got home today and I'm like, I should record something. And so I'm going to record this week's, what show is this? First syllable. And I may watch a time loop movie tonight. So new notes for the last syllable of recorded time, which is something I still want to write. If I could, let's daydream for a moment. If I could finish Death, 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 and write Death, Death, Death Part 2 and Death, Death, Death Part 3, and they got made, and I knew that if I wrote another script, it could be made, I would sit down and write the last syllable finally if I haven't already by then, and I want to write that still. Even though that was like 2 years ago or whatever that the idea came to me, and I didn't get to it. Because the last syllable of Recorded Time is such a great time loop thing, and the structure is so detailed and meticulous and precise. If it could be made, it would be so good. It's like today mentioned, well, this came up because the new time loop movie is called River. Apparently is made by the guy who did the Infinite 2 Minutes? Is that what it's called? It's called Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes. I should remember these things. And I love that movie. And that is a movie that is very precise about it, how its time loop works. Because its time loop is this computer that is on a delay. So you can watch a video clip from the future and interact with it, sort of. But then that interaction affects what you're going to be doing when that interaction happens. You know, Tenet. Whatever happened, happens.
What's happened, happened. Which is an expression of faith in the mechanics of the world. It's not an excuse to do nothing.
And that's hard to write. Tenet uses that, but it uses that in such broad strokes that it, yeah, it's careful and it's too much for the average audience. But as far as a precise time loop goes, it's not that detailed. Because there's not that much nuance to how each loop matters, because we're following one character through it. The key to the last syllable of Recorded Time is eventually we're following four characters. Or five. Because the time loop can be expanded and contracted. It's not just about... What's his name? PJ? No. CJ. It's like, that's not right. Acronyms are your friend. It's not an acronym. It's an initialism, you fuck. Be an acronym, he'd have to be called... And he's not. He's called Connie, he's called Connor, he's called CJ. Depending on who's talking. That's another thing. Coming back to the death, 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 give every character their own things going on. But not important things. Not like they're going through huge, life-changing decisions. Because fuck that. We don't need that. We don't need their near-death experience to somehow change their life. It's going to change their life. We deal with that in the sequel. But nicknames. Nicknames are great. Marty calls Susie 3PO because she calls him R2. Which Ed asks him, is it because he's on a wheelchair? And he's got wheels? He's like, no, because R2 is awesome. Because he loves Star Wars. But also, his name is Marty in 1985, which is important because that's when Back to the Future came out. But also, Silver Bullet came out. That wasn't even a planned thing. The Back to the Future thing was exactly why it's 1985, is because I wanted him to have just seen Back to the Future for the first time. But because he's young, we could think this is in the present, and he's just seen Back to the Future for the first time. Okay, whatever. But he loves it. Main character's name is Marty, and it's about time travel, and it blew his mind, because he loves science fiction and fantasy. And it's going to affect the way the plot plays out. But also Silver Bullet just came out, which is an adaptation of Stephen King's Cycle of the Werewolf, which is about a main character named Marty who is in a wheelchair. And that was a fucking coincidence. Ugh, I love that. But, you know, like Frenchie. Her name is Connie Constance, but everyone calls her Frenchie. The Marys. Several times have been referred to jointly like that as the Marys. Who else has a nickname in that story? Well, Ringo. His name isn't Ringo. His name's John. He's named for two different potential unsolved murder victims, John Ringo and John Bibby. And so his name is John Ringo Bibby, for example. I should just get into a whole detailed thing of the character breakdowns and all the names and everything at some point. I will, but once the script is over, once I have an idea where it's going, not where it's going, like sending it out to people or whatever, just like I know it's done, then maybe I'll do it, because spoilers are our friends. If you can't spoil something and still enjoy it, then it was probably already going bad. Boom. One-liner, drop the mic, end the show. See you next week.
Cut. You're still here? It's over.
Stuff that dreams are made of.
It's a passport.
Go home.
To another world.
Go.
Also, listen to the Groundhog Day Project Minute by Minute, you fucks. Also, listen to this show. Wait, I guess if you're hearing this, you're already listening to this show. Share the show. Tell your friends about it. It sucks. It's awesome. It's wonderful. And it's boring and bad. And I just rambled for over half an hour. And I dropped the mic like a minute ago. Not literally, but, you know, figuratively. Fuck, I should have ended on that note. Well, maybe in editing I did. But not now that I said it. Ugh. Now I have to end here with a, not with a bang, but a whimper. This is the way the world ends. Now, this is the way the podcast ends. This is the way the podcast ends. This is the way the podcast ends. Not with a one-liner, but a, I don't know, a sigh.